Ted Crackle joins me live in studio. He is a professor and editor-in-chief of the Papers of George Washington at the University of Virginia. Ted, I've really been looking forward to this. I always enjoy when anybody on your team comes in here to chat, because as I was telling folks at the top of the show, this is one of the great things about Charlottesville is the people who know more about George Washington live right here. They live and work right here, and it's great to just be able to pick your brain sometimes.
I've got a great team, and it's a real pleasure to be here, Coy. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Let's start, if we can, just with a Ted Crackle 101. Just give us a little bit of your background and how you ended up at UVA working on George Washington.
Sure. I've got a mixed background. I spent 21 years in the Army, about half of that teaching, some of it at West Point and Command General Staff College, the War College, and then ended up starting a project of my own in the early 90s that dealt with the War Department of the early years, immediately after the war, from 1784 to 1800. In 1800, a fire in the War Office had destroyed all of those papers, so I launched a project to see if we could find copies of those documents that had burned. Where most projects start off with a big pile of paper, we started off essentially with a pile of ashes. We thought we might find 10 or 12,000 copies of documents. On an optimistic day, we said 15,000. When I left, we were approaching 50,000 documents.
Wow!
Which is an amazing collection of these early War Department records, and will be an invaluable record at one of these days when it's all available. It's now housed at George Mason University. And we're looking forward to having that finished before too long.
And so, these would be the records that the War Department kept before it was the Department of Defense. It was the War Department.
That's correct.
That department kept up until 1800?
Up in 1800.
Yeah.
And then in the records since 1800, this record that we're putting back together, or that they're putting back together now, may be actually richer than the first few years of the records that exist after the war. Because I suspect in the War of 1812, the rush to get things out of Washington before the British came in to burn it may have meant some of the earliest records that were still extant did not survive that period.
Yeah.
But we don't know what happened to all of those.
Tell me, I'm curious, when you're working on that project and you're looking for, you're the first person to go out looking for this archive that had burned and disappeared, and I'm curious, did you at any one time come across something that you were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we found this?
Well, I think there are a number of those kinds of things, and it was almost the sum of finding so much, so many records, letter books that contained the incoming correspondence from the War Office, other documents like that, saying that, gee, these copies of this should have been in the War Office at the time of the fire, and so many of those records. There were, of course, always the things that amaze you a lot. The records of I remember one in particular, a set of records that detailed the it was a receipt, was what it was, I think, for the housing of an Indian delegation that was coming in to Philadelphia, and they were on their way to Philadelphia to meet with the folks there. And I think they were in Pittsburgh at the time on the way. And the receipt showed an awful lot of liquor being served to them, which was, I thought, very interesting. Along the same line, we found a record of at least one organization within the Army whose liquor ration extended to the children in the organization. We don't know quite what to make of that yet.
Wow.
The scope of subjects that are covered in these records is really quite remarkable.
So many dissertations remain to be written about what you put together.
Yeah. I think so. There was a case where we had the materials were being shipped to Pittsburgh to building some boats there, and the materials that they sent that sort of go along with the boats, the rope, the anchors, things, included a number of foreign flags. I mean, it was common on ships of sea to carry foreign flags. Why ships on the Ohio would need these foreign flags, I wasn't quite sure, but there were English, French, and Spanish flags included in the case. So
amazing.
We're never quite sure what all these things were for.
My guest is Ted Crackle. He's a professor and editor-in-chief of the Papers of George Washington at the University of Virginia. We're honored to have him live in studio. So let's talk about Mr. Washington. And let's just start with a very general question. You've gotten to know this man very, very well with the work that you've done here at UVA. I'm curious what it is you think that most of us don't know about him. The one thing, perhaps, that you really only get to see if you spend so much time with his papers that we may not have learned in grade school.
I think one of the things that is always emerges slowly out of the study of Washington is his expertise in management. He was a dynamic leader in many senses, but it was his management skills and leading, it seems to me, that set him apart. He may not have been the highly trained, highly educated, as I should say, Madison or Jefferson. He may not have been the deep thinker, the economist that Hamilton was, but he was a great leader. He knew how to manage people, and he knew how to use people to their best advantage and get the best from them.
And what do you think was his secret to that?
I think often just giving them their head, giving them a kind of mission statement. This was a typical, I guess, of a military officer, but yeah. Giving them a mission statement, tell them what you want done, and then give them the resources and the time to put it together and use their expertise to decide how it should be done.
So not exactly a micromanager kind of guy. He was
exactly
a big picture kind of guy and a big guy as well.
A big guy as well, absolutely.
How tall was he?
He was about between, well, we're not exactly sure, but 6'2 to 6'3, I think, as a general rule, is the what we think he was. And he was a big guy. There is one case, though, where he was referred to as mon petit général, when he went aboard right after the battle at Yorktown, and he went aboard de Grasse's flagship. And de Grasse was a giant of a man, stood about 6'6", 6'7", and was a very heavy man, and came up and grabbed Washington and hugged him. This was not the kind of treatment Washington was used to, but he certainly put up with it in this case.
Ted Crackle is editor-in-chief of the Papers of George Washington at the University of Virginia. And the phone lines are open at 977-1070 if you have a question for Ted about George Washington. Let's talk about his inauguration. We just went through a big historic inauguration here for President Obama. Tell us about the first inauguration.
Well, it was, of course, a rather simple affair in many ways, although it was in New York City, celebrated with a very large audience. People began to arrive not all that much later in the morning, I guess, in New York as they did in Washington just early in January. This inauguration occurred at the end of April rather than in February, because that's when the government was ready to be put together. But it was a simple plan. Washington came. In fact, Martha wasn't even with him, hadn't arrived yet. He came. Adams had been inaugurated as vice president a week or so before, and he arrived in the chamber. Met the senators and the members of Congress. They went out on a platform above, just outside of the Senate chambers, and he took the oath of office. They went back in. He read, rather haltingly, it seems, a paper which he had prepared, a statement thanking the members and talking just a little bit about what his plans might be. And then they moved on. And because Martha wasn't there, there was no inaugural ball immediately. Although a week later and the week following that, there were two very large balls, which certainly would qualify, I guess, today.
We're talking with Ted Crackle, the Papers of George Washington, and we're going to go to the phones in just a minute. Todd, stay with me. Let me ask you this. At this time in America, leadership, political leadership, was often determined by two big things. You were either a military hero, great military leader, or you were a fantastic public speaker. Thomas Jefferson, of course, was neither. And George Washington, of course, was a great military leader. And you may have already answered this question, but I'm wondering how he was as a public speaker. Jefferson, of course, was deplorable. really, really bad, an effeminate lisp and very soft-spoken. People could never hear him when he was making his speeches. What was Washington like in that regard?
Washington wasn't all that much better. He did have a slightly deeper voice, we think, and he wasn't particularly hesitant as he read, but he read quietly. Now, Jefferson, of course, said that people in the front row couldn't hear him, but I think Washington did not suffer from that. But he was not a dynamic speaker in any sense of the word. That was not where his strong suit was.
Let me ask you to put on those headphones, and we'll go to the phones. We're talking with Ted Crackle of the Papers of George Washington. We're honored to have him live in studio. The phone lines are open. If you've got a question about George Washington, this is the man to ask. It's 977-1070. Todd is on the line in Charlottesville. Todd, you're on with Ted Crackle. You go right ahead.
Yes, you were just saying before about a item that we may not know about or may not have learned in school, and something that my daughter just shared with me, and I always wanted to run this by him or confirm this, was they asked George Washington what one of his greatest accomplishments was, and he said that he didn't die in office because he thought that at the founding of the country that it was real important that one leader make it through and turn over the reins to the next leader.
Well, it's certainly true that one of the great traditions that Washington started was resigning at the end of his second term and turning the office over, a peaceful turnover of the presidency. But that was Washington's style. In 1783, at the end of 1783, the end of the war, when he resigned his commission and turned in his commission to the Congress, even in the United States, people were astonished at that. But in Europe, they were particularly astonished. The newspapers of all of Europe were full of stories, just unbelieving stories that Washington would, as they thought, rumored to be resigning his commission, going back to the farm. They just couldn't believe this was going to happen, and it did. He was very much that way.
Todd, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. 977-1070, got a line open for you. You got a question about George Washington? Ted Crackle is my guest, the editor-in-chief at the Papers of George Washington at the University of Virginia. Ted, tell us about that first administration. When he got into office, what was the priorities, what weighed on him, and what was it like?
Well, I think the first thing was actually to establish a government. The government was defined only very rudimentary, in a very rudimentary fashion, by the Constitution. And so Washington had to build the government and build his, at least the executive branch of the government, and to an extent the judiciary branch of the government from scratch. For example, the Constitution defined how the members of the cabinet officers would be approved. Congress would just, the Senate would give its advice and consent on their hiring, in effect. But nothing was said in the Constitution about what happens if you want to dismiss them. The Congress spent quite a bit of time in those first few months talking about that before they even agreed to establish the various offices, the War Department, the State Department, the Treasury. And Washington was quite put out, actually, because they were talking about all of this, and he wanted to get on with getting this government organized. But even then, these offices, the War Office, for example, had about four clerks, a doorkeeper, and the secretary, and that was it. that was the War Office, and
amazing.
It stayed that way for quite a while.
Amazing.
The State Department was not all that much larger.
Tell me, what do you think was among his greatest disappointments, whether political or personal?
His greatest disappointments, I think, came a bit later, particularly in his second administration, when opposing political parties came into being and began to argue and fight among themselves. And I think that he was very disappointed at that. He would have preferred that there be a single large party and that everyone cooperate with each other, at least so that the differences might be sectional, but not political. And he didn't like political parties.
Yeah, and of course, Thomas Jefferson was one of those who turned against him.
That's exactly right. Jefferson was a fine and a Secretary of State that Washington liked very much. He was very very happy with Jefferson's skill as a secretary and appreciated it very much, but came to be very unhappy with Jefferson as Jefferson, one, opposed his views, and as Jefferson's supporters began to criticize Washington. Washington was usually fairly thick-skinned in many ways, but he did hurt when people jibed at him, and some of the things said about various members' personal attacks various members of the political factions, very hurtful. And Washington disliked that. He thought this was not proper.
Let's go back to the phones. Hal is on the line in Charlottesville. Hal, you're on with Ted Crackle. You go right ahead.
How you doing?
Fine.
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks. I was listening. I think it was on Jeopardy, and they said on there something like George Washington gave the shortest inauguration speech in American history because he was self-conscious about his teeth. I think it was 30 seconds. I was wondering if you knew anything about that.
Great question.
A
great question. Thanks for the call, Hal. So, Ted, what is the story on the teeth? What is that all about?
Well, he did have false teeth, of course. They were not wooden, as we are often taught, but he did have false teeth. They were some were enameled, some were bone, and a few were actually made with some human teeth. They were, I think, rather uncomfortable. You look at them today and see that they were sort of spring operated, and that rather than having something that would stick to your upper part of the mouth and hold the dentures in place, they were held in place with spring tension, and they must have been fairly uncomfortable. It was not that short a speech. It was somewhat longer than that, and he never, so far as I know, complained about the pain occurred in giving either of his inaugural addresses.
Tell us what you're working on right now. When you go back to your office, I'm wondering what what's front burner for you.
Well, our day to day business is publishing the papers of George Washington, and the project, when it was begun back in 1968, was organized in six series. We started with the diaries, which were done first because it gave, first of all, we had them. We didn't have to collect the diaries. And while the other documents were being collected from all across the country, all around the world, they worked on the diaries and did those six volumes of his diaries. And it gave the editors a chance that were with the project then, a chance to sort of get used to Washington and to get a sense of who he was. Then we started with five chronological series, the colonial period from his youth until the time of the Revolution, the Revolutionary War, the shorter period between the Revolution and the presidency, the Confederation period, the presidency, and his retirement. Of those five, three are finished, the shorter ones, the colonial, the Confederation, the retirement, and we're now working on the last two series, or the two series remaining to be finished, the Revolutionary War, which will be the longest of the series. That'll be 40 volumes alone just in the Revolution.
Oh, my goodness.
We are at volume 20 I'm reading right now, and we'll be sending that to the press before too long. And then in the presidency, we're into the second term, well into it now, and that series will be the first of the two to be finished. And then everybody will turn to doing the Revolution. We do two volumes a year, and we've got about 30 volumes to go. That means we've got about 15 years of work yet ahead of us.
My goodness. Ted Crackle is the editor-in-chief of the Papers of George Washington at the University of Virginia. You can learn more online at virginia.edu/GW Papers. Ted, I really appreciate it, and let's get you back in here again real soon.
I'd like that very much.